All right, Kathy, come on up. I was telling Kathy, I saw in our publicity yesterday, we had mainstreamers, Kathy Bernal being the guest, it said Kathy Bernal with an exclamation point at the end. Like, everyone was super excited to see you, Kathy, and we are. Although I noticed today that it disappeared, so we're a little bit more sober today without the exclamation point. But we're still very, very glad to be with you today. Kathy is the chair of our diaconate, and many of you know Kathy, I think, from choir and from other encounters with her, maybe in Sunday school or something. I know you've kind of gone around to different Sunday schools. I don't know if you've been with any of these folks, but so glad that you're here with us today, and wanted to kind of jump in with a little bit of biography about you. I'm going to save a little bit of time for the folks here to ask questions, but tell us a little bit about where you were born. Maybe talk to us a little bit about your circumstances of growing up, your parents, siblings. I know you have a few siblings. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm a little hesitant to tell you where I was born because there's bowls of soup on the table and I don't want any of them thrown at me. But I was actually born in New Jersey, but it was a very short stint there. We moved when I was about 6 weeks old and we moved to California. So, yes, I was born in New Jersey, but no, I do not have an accent and I do not remember New Jersey whatsoever. Growing up, my parents were William and Sandra. And I have two older brothers named William and Robert, and I am actually Catherine. But my mom decided to butcher those three names, and so we grew up as Billy, Bobby, and Kathy. My brothers are 5 years older and 7 years older than I am, so I really was kind of the princess that ruled the roost in my house growing up.
Tell me about one of your brothers has a really interesting, even more than hobby, I think, that I know about. And I wanted to let you kind of talk to us about what that is. I know one of them owns a restaurant.
Right.
And talk to us a little bit about your interesting brothers.
Yes. So my oldest brother was the quintessential firstborn, did everything right, went to medical school, graduated the top of his class, went on to be an anesthesiologist. But when he was younger, he really wanted a pet snake. And my mother said no. And he asked her every year for Christmas for about 5 years, and she always said no. Well, my brother recently retired from medicine, and he decided that he was going to start raising and breeding exotic snakes. I kid you not, ball pythons, and he is now one of the biggest breeders in the Southwest. He has his own podcast, and he sells his snakes to famous football players, basketball players, you know, people that are very interested in getting into this hobby. It's really weird, and I can't believe I just admitted all of that to y'all. He's really a normal guy with just kind of a very strange hobby.
And do you visit the snakes? He has like a whole place where he raises them and stuff?
Yes. So he built a whole separate house in his, he lives on some property and we call it the snake house. I do not go in it, but my husband David and my son James quite enjoy it and they will go out there and hold these big snakes. Yes, that's me too. I'm like, ugh.
I have lots more snake questions, but I'll jump past them. I'll ask
thank
you those.
Thank you. I appreciate
later.
That.
Talk to us like what kind of kid you were. Were you mischievous? Were you a good student? Just what kind of personality did you have growing up, Kathy?
Well, I think my two brothers had the mischief covered very well. And so I was a really good girl. I was a mama's girl. I was a very happy child. I was a pudgy child, a little bit awkward, tried to be funny and usually was not. I think I was a kind child and I got along with pretty much anybody. So
in school, were you a good student? I bet you were.
I was a pretty good student. The only problem was my father worked for a large newspaper conglomerate. And that required us to move about every 2 years. So by the time that I was in, let's say, eighth grade, I had had like six different schools. So it was kind of challenging. Just when I would get up to speed and get my stride at one school, we would move again. So I would say I was about a B student until college, and then law school. I peaked in law school.
What in moving around so much, like, How did you deal with that? Was that sounds like it was a challenge. It would be a challenge for anybody. But like, what do you, looking back on that, do you take anything from that to say that made me a stronger person, or was it just I just muddled through and I made it through, or what was that like?
I think it taught me three things. One, it taught me the importance of family. Because a lot of times, you know, we didn't have friends. And so we relied a lot on each other and my parents to be our friends. I mean, Friday nights at our house were eating fondue and playing poker with poker chips. So it really stressed in me an importance of family. And it definitely made me stronger and more outgoing. I never meet a stranger. I'm really happy to meet new people and talk to new people and find out about new people. And I think the third thing, and this is kind of interesting, is when David and I got married and started raising our children, I made it very clear to him that we are not moving. Like, my children are going to stay and be raised here in Houston. I'm not going to do that to them what I felt like was extremely challenging to me. Yeah. And we've held true to that.
Good, good. And you're not going anywhere?
Nope.
Okay. Hobbies. What'd you enjoy doing? Staying away from the snakes, but what did you like to do?
Oh, singing. That's all I did. Honor choirs, theater, musicals. That was my happy place. When I was singing, that's where I wanted to be all the time.
Did you have a favorite part or favorite sort of music or anything like that?
I loved it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and after high school, where'd you graduate from high school?
J.J. Pierce in Dallas.
And then you went to University of A&M, right?
I went to A&M,
talk to us
yes,
about that decision. Get some whoops out there, I know. Talk to us about that part of your life, meaningful friendships that you developed. Talk to us about Aggieland a little bit.
Well, it was kind of interesting how I arrived there. I was kind of all set to go to Baylor, believe it or not. I had a music scholarship, and that was just where I thought I belonged. And one day, kind of on a whim, a girlfriend and I drove down to Texas A&M and did not have a formal tour scheduled, just walked around the campus. And I knew that's where I wanted to be. It was just the strangest thing. I can't even tell you. I went home and told my dad that I was going to be an Aggie. And he was like, oh, my goodness. Like, I was the first one in my family to ever utter those words. But it turned out to be a very good place for me. I made lifelong friends. There's about a group of seven of us who are scattered throughout Texas. But we talk every single day on the phone. And we see each other at least once a month with their husbands and my husband. So, you know, I truly developed an incredible friendship from going to that school.
And then did you go straight to law school after A&M?
I did.
Where did you go to law school? And tell us, you mentioned that you felt like kind of came into your own maybe in law school. Talk to us about that experience, what law school was like.
Yeah, so I went to South Texas College of Law right here in Houston. I moved to Houston, did not know a soul, lived by myself. I felt that to be very scary, yet very empowering. And I would not change that for a moment. And law school just turned out to be the absolute, one of the best times of my life. I clearly felt that it was where I was supposed to be. I enjoyed learning about the law. And I think one of my favorite things about law school was, up until that point, hard work in education didn't always reward you. For example, you could be the best student, but if you weren't great at taking the SATs or the LSAT, that could hold you back. But I found in law school, the dedication, the hard work, the hours, it really paid off, and I found that to be very rewarding, and I enjoyed that part of law school very much.
And did you do mock trial or moot court or those kind of things?
Yes, I did moot court because I really enjoyed the writing part, not so much the argument in front of a judge, but I really enjoyed the writing aspect of it. So I chose moot court. I also was an editor on Law Review and actually graduated number 3 in my class.
That's so, really, really great. And talk to us about your law practice. Where did you go to work? And you stayed in Houston? Okay. Talk to us a little bit about your law career. How many years did it span? And I think we might have crossed paths like in a silica deposition sometime. But, my brother did too. But talk to us about what your law practice was like, where you practiced, and maybe a story or two about your practice.
So I was recruited right out of law school to work at a firm called Baker Botts here in Houston, which you may have heard of. And it's because of that decision that I am actually sitting in front of you right now, because I met a person named Jim Barkley. And Jim Barkley knew that I liked to sing, and he knew that I did not have a church home here in Houston. So he said, well, why don't you come visit South Main and come visit the choir and see how you like it? And 25 years later, you know, here I am. So I've given thanks to Jim Barkley many, many times over for that invitation from him. But to answer your question about my legal practice, I started in commercial litigation. And dabbled a little bit in labor and employment law. And after a couple years, I realized that labor and employment law was what I really enjoyed doing. In a lot of ways, it's more of a preventative type of law. I found that most of my time was spent helping my clients do the right thing and to avoid litigation, and that just felt right to me. So I stayed at Baker Botts for several years, then went to a smaller firm, and eventually ended up working for a company as their head labor and employment counsel, and that was just so enjoyable to me. I really, really miss doing that.
And where along your path did you meet David? Talk to us a little bit about David Bernal.
Yes. So David is a lawyer as well. And I met him through the legal world. And in fact, we got set up to go to a friend of a friend's wedding in College Station, of all places, at the A&M campus. Our friend told David, hey, you know, you've met Kathy before, right? And he said, yes. Well, she's going to the wedding and she's going by herself. Why don't y'all ride up to College Station together? And so we did. And as they say, the rest was history. Fell in love with David, and he is the most incredible husband, supportive, loving, and we have built such an amazing life together and have built our life around this church and God.
And tell me a story about David. Give everyone a, kind of a picture of what David's like. Y'all know David? He's so quiet, you know? tell us a story about David, whether it was, you know, when you met or maybe as a father, something sort of emblematic about David.
Well, many of you may or may not know that when David and I got married, he had 2 little girls from a previous marriage, and they were 5 when we got married. Their names are Amanda and Haley. We also have 2 children together. Amanda and Haley grew up in this church, so many of you know them. But as David and I were getting very serious and we were in love and we both knew where this was headed, we sat down and had a conversation about the tough things you have to talk about when you're in your late 20s and you're getting married and he is bringing 2 wonderful children to the marriage. We talked about whether he wanted more children. And I had to ask him, and I said, you know, are you willing to have more children? And I sat there and I held my breath, waiting for what I hoped was going to be the right answer. And his response was, well, if you won't have more children with me, it might be a deal breaker. So needless to say, if I had had any doubts about marrying him, at that very moment, they were all wiped away.
Well, I'm glad you talked about it. Sounds like a deal breaker for you too, then. Well, talk to us a little bit about how, you know, with kids and eventually more kids on the way, how you have balanced, you know, work and family and, you know, being a wife to David and just all the other things that I know you do. Talk to us a little bit about kind of how you balance all those things. And I know there's tennis too, right?
Tennis came much later. So for those of you that don't know, David and I also have two children, Anna Grace, who is a sophomore at Baylor, and James, who is a freshman at Strake Jesuit. So total of four. And trying to balance that and a full-time career. And David is also a litigator, so he worked long hours. In the early years, we had wonderful nannies that came in and helped us. And I, after about, let's see, I guess I had been practicing for about 15 years. James was five. It just became very apparent to me that it just wasn't working, and I was worried that one of the balls that was in the air was going to be dropped. And David and I sat down to talk about it, and by this point, I was really ready to stay home with the kids and be a full-time mom. But we sat down and said, okay, you know, it's time. One of us needs to stay home. I mean, at this point, we were thinking about hiring a night nanny because I was traveling and it just got too insane. So we sat down and he said, okay, well, on the count of three, let's say who we think should stay home and be with the kids. Because at that point, we were both making the same amount of money. I mean, it could have been either one of us. And luckily, we both said, you know, you. So he wanted me to stay home. I wanted me to stay home. It was both me. I'm not saying that correctly. But anyways, so after many, many, many years of juggling, we finally decided that that was the best decision for our family.
And what are Amanda and Haley doing now? I know they're both doing really well. Talk to us about that.
Yes. So Haley just graduated from law school, my alma mater, South Texas. She also did moot court and held the same position on law review as I did, which I thought was sweet. And she, in the fall, is going to be clerking for a Supreme Court justice in Austin. And Amanda is here locally as well, and she worked in the HR department at Methodist Hospital.
And Anna and James, talk to us a little bit about them, what they're like, I guess what their personalities are, and what maybe of yourself and what of David that you see in them. Take them one at a time, maybe.
Anna Grace, she is sweetness defined. She is kind to everyone. She is, you would never know this because she actually was a cheerleader her whole life. But she's very introverted. And so it really takes a lot out of her to come out of her shell and to enter a crowded room full of strangers. So in that way, she's very unlike me and very much like David. James, however, is Mr. Social. And in fifth grade, he was BMOC and just thought he was the cat's meow. But also, like Anna Grace, very kind, very nice. And if you were to ask me what the best thing I've ever done in my life is to say that I have raised two and actually four very, very kind, compassionate human beings.
And how did that happen? I mean, like, talk to us about what kind of mother you are. You feel like you're strict or you're pretty lenient or, you know, is there a good cop, bad cop thing going on or what? Talk to us about you as a mother of these kids.
I have no idea how that happened, that we seem to have these four sweet, kind children, other than the fact that I think in our household, there's a lot of respect. David and I talk very kindly to each other. We hardly ever raise our voices at each other. And so I hope that our children just learn from us how to teach, you know, learn from us how to treat other people. So I'm hoping they just learned that just naturally from our environment within our house.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing. They kind of absorb and organically become who they are based on what they see. But that's really saying something nevertheless. Well, now let's kind of go back in time a little bit, I think, and talk about your faith. How did it first develop? Was it something that you had in your immediate home when you grew up? And kind of how did it develop? How was it nurtured in your life as you got older?
Faith was always prevalent in our household. My dad grew up Baptist and my mom grew up Methodist. However, due in part, I think, to moving very often. I did not grow up with a church home, and it was not, to be honest, a super priority for my parents to establish a church home in the various places that we lived. And I felt that loss as I grew older. And so when I entered high school and saw a lot of my high school friends involved in church, I started going with them, and was baptized, in high school in a Baptist church up in Dallas. And, it became very important to me. Again, another conversation that David and I had before we got married was how important church was to me and to raise our family in a church. I was already attending South Main, and already y'all already had my heart by that point. So I was hoping it was going to be South Main, but the lack of a church stability growing up really really had an effect on me, and I did not want that for my children.
When has your faith sort of been challenged? I mean, was there a time when you're particularly, you know, lonely and had to fall back on your faith, or a time, you know, when a, you know, a trial or challenge came about, real trial, maybe, I don't know. But, when I mean real trial, like a litigation trial, I remember praying before I went into the courthouse a few times myself, but what, talk about how your faith was challenged, or when it was challenged, and how you dealt with that.
This probably isn't the right answer, because I feel like I need to knock on wood when I say this, but, I don't feel that my faith has been challenged. I feel like it has always been there for me, and there were definitely lonely, hard times. My parents actually ended up divorcing when I was a freshman in high school, which is a very difficult time. I was the last one at home, and my mother did not fare the divorce very well, and so for many years I kind of had to see her through that and take care of her through that. And I lost both my parents very young. My dad was 56. He passed away of cancer, and my mom was 63 and passed away of cancer. So those were, I think, probably my hardest times. My faith was never challenged. It was there. It supported me through it 100%.
That's great. And you've told us a little bit about how you made your way to South Main. Visit with us a second about the things that you've done here. I know you've been in the choir, leadership in the choir, Bach to Broadway, active in Sunday school, but tell us a little bit about what you've done and how that sort of maybe nurtured your faith or increased your faith or your involvement here in the church.
I've been very blessed to have had involvement in, I think, just about every aspect of this church. It started out in choir, and y'all have seen me sing in Agape and chamber choir and all the musicals, which I loved doing. One of my favorite things about doing those musicals is getting to meet people from a different generation and spending time with them. And so that has been very rewarding. David and I were asked to start a new Sunday school community when we were young. So we are one of the pioneer couples of the Fellowship of Young Families. And we served as community leaders for about 15 years there. And then we moved over and taught the youth for many years and really enjoyed that. Lots of committee work. I love the committees at South Main. I think they're fascinating. I think it's amazing that lay people all get together and spend their time and their talents to make this church run as smoothly and beautifully as it does. So I've chaired several committees, nominating, coordinating.
Yeah. By the time you did nominating, coordinating, like, I think maybe we realized it. I don't want to ask, when did you realize that you were being groomed to be the whole the deacon chair? Because that's sort of a path that where you're really involved with things that kind of spread out over the whole church. When you do coordinating committee and you do nominating in particular to populate all the other committees, you get to know people. When did you kind of, I guess, when did you begin to think, okay, or did you think, maybe they're going to ask me to be deacon chair? And what was that like? Where, I guess Steve asked you, and how did you handle that?
So I think I first realized that I might have been groomed for the deacon chair position when Steve showed up on my doorstep and asked me to be deacon chair.
That was it. This is sort of a surprise.
Yes. I could not have been more surprised. The reason why I served on all those committees is because I learned very quickly that you don't say no to Susan Moore or Steve Wells. But that's not true. I could have said no, but I really, really was honored to serve in all of those capacities. So.
And what's that been like now that you've been doing it for, I guess, a year?
How long?
Almost a year?
9 months.
Okay. What has that been like? Have you felt like the weight of leadership on you, or have you been just enjoyed it and it's been great? All the meetings have gone well, but how's that felt, I guess, as you've entered that role?
Well, I kind of started serving a little bit in the role probably in October, just kind of some onboarding kinds of things. And once a month, Steve would tell me, I promise you, it's not always going to be this busy. I promise you, it's not always going to be this busy. And then I think it was in March of this year, I said, excuse me, Steve, when is it not going to be that busy? And he said, when I go on sabbatical. Actually, he didn't say that, yeah. But I felt that way.
And it wasn't less busy either, right?
No, it was a busy summer, but I think it's been such an honor to serve the deacons and to serve the congregation. I would say the only burden that I have ever felt is when people come to me with an issue or a concern, and my immediate desire is to fix it. You know, I want to fix it and make them happy and make them better and make them feel more fulfilled. And I can't always do that. I either don't have the power to do it, or it's just something that's not fixable. So I just try to listen and empathize and try to say the right words to comfort them.
And I guess there's a lot of maybe role models that have kind of modeled that for you, but talk to us about maybe some of those people from whom you've learned here at South Main, whether it's in leadership or in a, you know, fellowship or small community, someone that maybe you've gone, well, that's a person that I should try to emulate.
Yeah.
Other than me, of course.
Well, that was going to be my first answer, of course. You know, I think I would have to just put it in a very broad context and say, not to leave the men out, because I have learned so much from the male leaders in our congregation, but the generation of women that have come before me, I am in awe and have learned so much about your grace and your faith and your commitment. And watching you all live your faith day in and day out and help others and just go about your quiet grace is just, it inspires me every week, every month, every year of how to do it right.
What about for the people that are kind of coming up? The younger people, people in the journey class, fellowship young families, kind of ironic there. I know we've been there for 20 years, but talk to us a little bit about your experience with maybe some younger South Mainers that have come. I know, like I said, you've gone to some other Sunday schools. What has been your experience with taking a look around the church and seeing some of the younger people and maybe potential younger leaders in the church?
In the spring, David and I took kind of a hiatus from the Fellowship of Young's Families class, which is actually very funny because most of us are in our 40s and 50s now, but we refuse to change the name. We're going to keep that name until we're in our 90s. But we decided to kind of take a tour of the younger Sunday school communities, people that were in their early 20s, late 20s, early 30s. And so we spent about 6 weeks in several different classes just getting to know them. And I have to tell you without reservation that the group of leaders below me are just amazing. They are incredible human beings that have a heart for this church and for worship and for faith. And I'm very, very positive that when my day has come and gone, that we are going to leave South Main into very capable and loving hands.
And I know we've got, I mentioned before we started that we've got this campus task force, which you're a part of, I know, and in meeting and looking at the future and thinking about that. Do you have, and I know it's sort of, you know, some of the future is a little bit fuzzy because what's going on in the neighborhood around us, but do you have some really, some dreams for South Main, you know, what this church could be within this community in the midst of all this ongoing change?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I would not consider myself to be a big dreamer, big picture kind of thinker. I tend to think more in the present day and how to make current conditions better and more enriching for myself, my family, and the congregation. So I very much rely on the big thinkers when it comes to how is our church going to be impacted and impact others as the community around us changes and builds and progresses. I think my bigger focus is how are we going to change and evolve and stay together and stay bonded as external forces continue to grow around us? You know, how do we continue to stay a family? And so that's honestly my primary focus.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, I want to ask you some a little bit more lightning round type questions that are kind of fun, and okay. Then we'll leave some time for everybody else to ask some questions as well. But Kathy, what's your idea of perfect happiness? Like you're just in your, you know, joyous kind of zone, something that really lights you up. Where do you find joy?
I would say that it's that first morning in October, the first cool front, when you walk outside and you go, oh, that is when my true happiness begins, and then it ends sometime in June and I go, oh, it's in the 90s. But I am truly happy being outside on a crisp, beautiful day. I feel very close to nature and God, and it just brings out this whole other side of happiness to me that I'm not so sure exists in July.
Do you have a place where your family likes to go vacation? You have a favorite place or?
No. Oddly enough, we're all kind of homebodies. Like, we love to be at home, do things at home, play games at home, watch movies at home. So I wouldn't say that we have a favorite place. We like more just kind of daily excursions, going to Galveston for the day or going to a state park and riding our bikes. That's not to say that we haven't had good vacations, but I would not say we're not big travelers like the Funderburk family is.
What's your greatest fear? What kind of can
cockroaches
consume you? What?
Cockroaches.
Oh, really? Okay, that was an easy one.
No. Other than that, I will say, but I am deathly afraid of cockroaches. It's crazy. But I think my biggest fear is not being around to see my grandchildren grow up. Just with parents passing away so young, I really hope that I, you know, am around for a very long time to see them grow and thrive.
What do you think you do especially well? Like, what do you, I'm pretty good at that.
I think hopefully making people feel heard, making people feel special, appreciated, needed.
And how do you think you do that? I mean, a lot of it's probably listening and just kind of having a pastoral presence, but what in particular do you think that maybe from a place that you learned it, or what do you think ushers that in?
I don't know. I really could not tell you.
Yeah.
Other than I just I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Yeah. Just kind of
if any of y'all figure that answer out, will you let me know?
Yeah. Forensically. What trait do you not like in yourself?
I think sometimes I can probably be a little overbearing. Like I like to solve that problem or, you know, just get on in there and fix it. And so sometimes I need to remind myself to just step back and let a person talk.
Yeah. What about in others? What sometimes kind of ticks you off in others?
I've said this actually many times. I can take any character trait. You can be grumpy. You can be sour. You can be irreverent, sarcastic. I don't care what it is. I just want you to be sincere. I do not like insincerity, fakeness. That is the one thing that just makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
What living person do you most admire and why?
It absolutely would be the generation of women in this church ahead of me. Absolutely. Hands down. I mean, I loved my mother. I'm sure that's probably the answer I should have said. There's been many women that have changed the world for the better. But the women of this church have changed so many lives, and I don't think they even know that they've done it.
Name something that as you've matured that you've changed your mind about?
Sour cream. I used to hate it. Now I love it.
It kind of grows on you.
Can't get enough of the stuff. It's ridiculous.
Nice. What do you wish if you take stock of your life now? What do you wish you would have done more of earlier in your life?
Nothing.
Good.
No. I mean, there's things that I wish I had done better.
Yeah.
But I feel like I, up until this point, have really done everything that I've wanted to do. I've loved greatly. I've given my heart and soul to this church. I fell in love. I raised a family. I had a great career.
Is there anything now that if you projected yourself 10 years in the future, you might go, well, I regret not doing more of it now. Like, is there anything, take that question into the present. Do you think you're missing anything now?
No.
Good for you.
I mean, I think I
should. If you would, you would change it, right?
Right. I need to tell my husband probably 20 more times a day how much I love him and how cute he is, but.
An experience you'd not want to repeat, but that's changed your life for the better.
Childbirth. Don't want to do that again. That's for sure. Middle school, just all of it. We moved right before I started middle school, and I auditioned for one of the choirs and got put in kind of the advanced choir. So I had a lunch period with all eighth and ninth graders. At this point, I was a seventh grader. I knew no one, and I was so scared that I spent the first probably 3 weeks eating lunch in the bathroom. So yeah, middle school started tough
Happy
to
times.
Me. I wouldn't want to do that again.
Anything weird or just kind of dumb, but you just love doing it?
It's so ridiculous. I love the show America's Funniest Home Videos. Do y'all ever watch that show? I've watched it since I was a kid. If you ask where I am Sunday night at 6 o'clock, I am watching that show and I'm laughing out loud.
Name a purchase under $100 that's made a real profound difference in your life.
I wish Adam was still in here. I don't think he is. So we had South Made at Home at my house on Saturday night, and we invited Adam and Kelsey. And we were talking about today, and I was very miffed that I had to follow him because I know he's a very good speaker and very charismatic. But I was asking him what his answer was. And when he told me, I said, oh, great. How am I going to follow that? So I actually have been thinking about this since Saturday. And it was really hard to come up with one, but I actually did. So my daughter, Anna Grace, as I told you, was very introverted. She kind of had a hard time making friends. And in second grade, when she was in second grade, my mom passed away. And my mom was her BFF. I mean, Anna Grace was crushed, just devastated by the loss of her grandmother. And so in an attempt to get her out of her shell and to introduce her to something that we thought she might like, I paid $75 and signed her up to be a Southwest Football League cheerleader. It's football little league. And so she went out there and started cheering. And let me just tell you, the girl found her home. She was so good at it. It gave her confidence over the years. It helped her get over the death of my mom. And, you know, she continued that on for the next 10 years. She ended up being varsity cheerleader her senior year at Bel Air High School. And so I think for her, that was probably the best $75 I ever spent.
Wow, that's great. Little things like that, you just never know where your life is going to turn like that. Yeah. That's great. Lawyer's question at the end of a deposition. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you want to tell us?
No.
Good. That's what I always tell my clients to answer.
A good lawyer also knows the correct answer to a question.
You know that trick. All right, Kathy, thank you so much for being with us today. And I have now we've left a little bit of time for some questions from our group here. Does anybody have a question for Kathy? Yes, Susan.
Where do you like to shop for clothes?
I love Target. It's one of my favorites. I like to shop at Ann Taylor Loft. Those are probably my two favorite.
Good. Anyone else? Yes, Connie.
I just want to know where your brother with the snakes lives.
A long way away from here. He's up in the Dallas area.
That's great.
Which, by the way, my other brother, Greg, mentioned owns several restaurants up in the Dallas area. So if you're ever up that way and want a list of his places to go enjoy, they're all amazing.
Yes, Alton, hang on just a sec.
I understand your love for A&M. I went to A&M in the late 60s, and I love it, too. I still love the area.
David hasn't learned how to whoop yet. Every time he does, it scares me because he kind of does it out of the blue and he makes this horrific noise. And I keep telling him, stop doing that. You don't know how to do that. So don't do it.
He didn't go to yell practice, right? Isn't that why you go to yell practice?
Yes. Yes. He goes to a lot of A&M games with me. So he's a good sport.
Right. Damon.
How did I know Damon would have a question for me? I know, right, Dan?
Kathy, what has been your biggest challenge as diagonal chair?
So far, two. I have had a few people come to me frustrated and wanting to leave the church. And I think the most difficult thing was finding the right words to get them to stay, because I didn't want them to leave, and I'm very happy to say that they're still here, so that's good. The second thing, and Steve said he was going to watch this, so this will be a test to see if he really does watch it. I'm trying to learn when to express anything that I disagree with Steve, and when it is time not to. Steve and I agree on 99.9% of things, but as any good relationship is, that 1% is also very important, or that 0.1%. So I am learning how to vocalize that in a way that still conveys trust and faith in him, but also just a, hey, did you think about this?
Good. And that's why we're lady-led church. That's really great. Let me ask you about back to Broadway. What was your favorite role and why?
I think I have enjoyed doing that immensely. Sharna is an amazing director. Working with her and Mike was always so wonderful. Working with Linda, so wonderful. But hands down, doing Mary Poppins, being Mrs. Banks and Mary Poppins was my favorite. I identified with her as a wife and a mother in some ways, but that was also the musical that my children and David did with me. And that was the first time that we experienced that as a family. And it was funny because the year before we had done Oklahoma and I had had kind of a lead role in that. So I was gone a lot and my kids and David did not. engage in that. And so they kind of complained, and I said, well, great, next time you all are going to do it with me. And I held them to it. And after the first rehearsal, they all came home and they were like, well, no. Like, we're not doing this, because it's just that first rehearsal where you're kind of going through the music and nobody knows anything. And oh man, by the end, it was the best thing that they had ever done. And it was honestly one of the best things our family has done together ever.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for being here with us today. And I just really appreciate not only your leadership, but your dedication to in so many different roles in the church over the past, you know, several years. And we're in Kathy's South Main at Home group, and it's a great group, just great fellowship and community. And you're the one that got that moving. And so appreciate your friendship as well.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.